Hey, Gajai. Shibari. So today we are commemorating the disappearance day of these two great personalities, Gauridas Pandit and Shidrupa Goswami. First, I'll mention a few words about Gauridas Pandit. So, Omagana Timadanda Shaganjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiditam Yenitas Mae Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Gauridas Pandit Raj Leela's known as Subal, and he's one of the, of course, it's one of the Dwadasa, that is the 12 Gopals, the 12 associates of Lord Nityananda. And these 12 associates are in the Sakya Ras. That means the Sakya Ras means the friendship relationship with the Supreme Lord, rather than in the Madhurya Ras. So this Gauridas Pandit, he's very well known because he had a lot of association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda would come and visit him on a regular basis, and one time he wouldn't let them go, and they said, well, you can make some deities of us. So they made some deities of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, exactly looking like Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda look. And this Gauridas Pandit later on, of course, had the disciple known as Hridayananda, who later on became Hriday Chaitanya, because the deities followed Gauridas' disciple to the bank of the Ganges. And Gauridas got very angry with the deities, and the deities jumped into the heart of his disciple, Hridayananda. And later on, because of that, Hridayananda became Hriday Chaitanya, which means Lord Chaitanya was in the heart of this particular individual. So that's Gauridas Pandit. So mainly we're going to speak about Srila Rupa Goswami today. So Srila Rupa Goswami is extremely important. Perhaps he is the most important of all the direct disciplic descendants. That means the ones who came directly after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we have this nice prayer, Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam, that we chant as part of the Mangala Charna. That means the auspicious prayers. The Charna means to sing or to pray. So this prayer means Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam, that the inner mood and desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been established. Stapitam. Stapitam means to be established. Just like you have someone who constructs a temple is known as a stapati, or who guides the construction of a temple is called a stapati. And if you're ever going to do a Vedic temple, you call for many stapatis to help with that. So, Stapitam Yena Bhutale. Bhutale, in this world, he is established, just like we have the prayer to Srila Prabhupada, that Bhutale, the same word is used here, this world. Srila Rupa Goswami is established, Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam, the internal mood and desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Gadamayam, Dadati Swa Padantikam. So, we are worshiping the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami because he has understood the internal mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and has given it to us through his literatures, through the excavation of different holy places, specifically in the Braj area, and through his worship of Sri Govindaji. So it's a very important personality. And as a result, we are called Rupanugas, which means, Anuga means to follow, so Rupa Anuga means to follow Srila Rupa Goswami. So here, a little bit about the history of Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami was born in the family of pure devotees. His father's name was Kumar Dev, and his mother's name was Rivati Devi. And they had five sons and one daughter. And of those five sons, three of them are specifically mentioned as being pure devotees. I don't have any information about the other sons or about the daughter. And that was, of course, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, his brother, and Anupama, his other brother. So, of course, Anupama passed away at an early age. So these were three great devotees, and originally their name was Amara and Santosh, at least Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And Anupama, his name was Anupama. So Rupa and Sanatana Goswami's names became changed, not specifically changed, but they got a different title when they worked for the Nawab Hussein Shah. And those titles were Dabir Kash and Shakara Malik. And Dabir Kash means private secretary. Shakara Malik means the... actually, Malik means like money. So Shakara Malik means the revenue officer or the tax collector, like that, the ones who's in charge of all the taxes. So they were forced to work for the Nawab Hussein Shah. Ordinarily, those who were born in Brahminical families... I was listening to a talk where Srila Prabhupada was talking to some gentleman from India, and Prabhupada was saying that, you know, one who takes employment, he's considered a Shudra. So ordinarily, those in Brahminical families would not take employment because that would, let us say, contaminate their activities and thoughts. As soon as you're taking money from someone, then you have to become influenced by that person. Now, you have to at least keep quiet when he or she is saying something different than what you believe in. And it's hard for a devotee, you know, if they're working for someone who's not Krishna conscious and the boss says, you know, I think we should invest in McDonald's, what do you do? I was just reading yesterday that McDonald's is responsible for the death of 67,000 cows every day. 67,000 cows a day. They were doing an average, like how many McDonald's hamburgers were sold a day and how many hamburgers can be made from one cow, etc. You know, McDonald's brags that they have on their store, they have something like 5 billion sold or something like that. So anyway, so if you're working for someone, then you really have to just at least shut your mouth. You know, if your big boss says, you know, yeah, I really think McDonald's is good. You can't say, Maya, like that. So therefore, ordinarily, people born in Brahminical families or people who want to keep their Brahminical stature have to be very careful about what employment they take. However, we find Dabir Kash, Shakara Malik, that means Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, accept employment from the Nawab Hussein Shah because the Nawab Hussein Shah threatened to harass, kill, burn down Hindu villages, you know, rape women, you know, all sorts of crazy things. And these were not simply empty threats because the Mughals, they were known for stuff like that. There were 80 million Hindus killed in the space of 400 years by the Mughals. People sometimes complain about Hitler, I mean, what he did is horrible too, obviously. But 80 million is far more than 5 or 10 million. And in one day, this one mogul, his name was Timur Lame, or Timur the Lame, because he couldn't walk properly, he killed like 150,000 Hindus just in one day. And it's mass slaughter, unlike anything we've seen, even in the modern world. I mean, the scale of it is much greater than anything we've seen in Europe or anywhere else in the world. So, anyway, so he threatened them, and so they said, you know, basically we have to work for you because if we don't, we're going to be responsible for the death of so many Vaishnavas. So they were very intelligent, very educated personalities. In fact, Rupa Goswami had written many books about Vaishnavism and the Vedic culture even before he took employment from Nawab Hussein Shah. And Nawab Hussein Shah was very, very pleased with their service because they were very, very expert in what they did. So as they were serving the Nawab Hussein Shah, both Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and also Anupama, they resided in this village called Aramakeli. And in this village, which is northern Bengal, in order to remain Krishna conscious, They constructed a whole replica of Vrindavan there. That means they had different places they considered to be Govardhan Hill and the Jamuna. So they just like made this replica. I don't know how big the replica was, but it was actually a nice replica. Sometimes the devotees do this in different temples. I know that they've done that in Hungary. They've constructed a replica. And also in New Govardhan in Australia, they've constructed a replica of Vrindavan. There's actually different aspects. You can walk all over and do a parikrama of Vrindavan there. So there were bathing places there, and there were constant readings of the Lord's pastimes going on all over this particular replica of Vrindavan. So in this way, they tried to alleviate their anxiety for having to work for the Muslim government. So they also studied very avidly. They became proficient in Sanskrit, Persian, Arabic, and many other local dialects, and they studied under Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother, that is Sarvanda Vidya Vachaspati. So they became very, very expert in all the different aspects of logic, that's Nyaya, and the Vedic literatures, and Sanskrit, and hermeneutics, and all those other things. So in 1514, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to go to Ramakeli to see these two brothers because they were his eternal associates. We understand that Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. So one may ask, why would he take birth and have to work in such a horrendous situation? And the reason is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna arrange for their devotees sometimes to take birth in situations that are less than desirable to carry out specific missions and also to glorify Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Of course, that's very similar to what happened with Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Muslim family. So, Dabir Kash and Shikara Malik made many plans to see Rupa Goswami, to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they saw that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was completely surrounded by literally thousands or tens of thousands of persons. So during the day, they couldn't really meet him. They first met Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur and Lord Nityananda let Lord Chaitanya know about their arrival. And as a symbol of their humility, both brothers fell on the ground. Actually, all three of them were there. They fell on the ground and they took straw between their teeth. This is like a Vedic symbol of humility. And they prayed to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is how they prayed. They said, "You are the most merciful savior of the fallen souls, all glorious to your supreme personality. We belong to the lowest class of men, and our associates and employment are of the lowest type. Therefore, we feel it strange to introduce ourselves to you. We are ashamed, for you are so pure. Dear Lord, let us assure you that no one is more sinful than us, nor is there any offender like us. Since you have specifically incarnated to deliver the fallen souls, please consider that there are none so fallen as the two of us, for we are worse than Jagai and Madai." Because that was their extreme humility. Obviously, they were not worse than Jagai and Madai. But the difference is, sometimes it's explained by the Acharyas, that Jagai and Madai never were involved in the service of Malechas. Of course, Jagai and Madai acted like Malechas, or worse than Malechas. I mean, they would kill people and attack women and obviously get drunk. So, but still, they were born. Jagai and Madai originally had the names Jagadananda and Madhavananda. And then they, for short, they were Jagai and Madai. It's actually interesting. Sometimes devotees take spiritual names and then they shorten them so it becomes something worse. Like, someone has the name, I have one disciple by the name Kamsahanta, and everybody calls him Kamsa. That's what happens when you have a long spiritual name with a bad part of the first name. So anyway, the two brothers bowed down to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya gave them initiation right on the spot. He said, "From now on, your names will be Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatan." And he said, "Please abandon your humility. It pains me to see you being so humble. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed, he said, I have come here specifically to see both of you. That's the reason I came to this village. So they spend some time with Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya also revealed to them that you are my surrendered servants, and life after life you have been serving me. And at that point, Rupa and Sanatan gave advice to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They said to him that you're going to Vrindavan with this large retinue, and this is not really appropriate for a sannyasi to travel with a large retinue to Vrindavan. It will destroy the peace in Vrindavan. It's just not the right thing. So, and also they said, you better get out of this area pretty quickly because the Nawab Hussein Shah, right now he's feeling favorable because he sees that you're very powerful and he respects you as being connected with God somehow or other. But you never know with these guys. He's a meat eater and he could change at any minute. And so they advised Lord Chaitanya in that way. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, instead of going to Vrindavan, he headed back to Jagannath Puri at that time because he took their advice. So after some time, Lord Chaitanya did go back to Vrindavan, but he went there just with like one servant. So this is very interesting. Like when you go to Vrindavan, things are meant to be very meditative and peaceful and not big, showy things. Okay. So then, Lord Chaitanya had also named Vallabha. Actually, yeah, Vallabha was the original name of the brother Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. So he, Lord Chaitanya gave him the name Anupama. So Srila Rupa Goswami and Anupama were able to renounce the world at that time. Somehow or other, they were able to get out of their service to the Nawab Hussein Shah. But Sanatan Goswami wasn't, I guess because he was the revenue officer and he was more dependent. Nawab Hussein Shah was more dependent on him. So as Rupa Goswami and Anupama renounced this world, they had a lot of money. And described by Srila Prabhupada how they divided the money, 50% to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, 25% to the relatives, and 25% for personal emergencies. That personal emergency money was later on utilized by Sanatan Goswami so he could escape from prison. Because Sanatan Goswami could not get out of the service of the Nawab Hussein Shah so easily. So he had to basically bribe his way out of prison. And that's a whole other story. So then Rupa and Anupama went to Prayag, which is present-day Allahabad. And this present-day Allahabad, the Prayag, that's where the Triveni is. You know the Triveni? That's the three rivers, you know, Saraswati, Ganges, and Jamuna, they meet. And that's where the Kumbh Mela and Mahakumbh Mela occur every, like, 12 years. So Lord Chaitanya instructed the two brothers in Krishna consciousness, the Sambandha Abhideya Prayoja, instruction for 10 days. And at that point, Rupa Goswami had composed this prayer that we chant every day. Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishna, Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gora Tasena Maha. That Lord Chaitanya, you're the most munificent incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because you've come to give what no other incarnation has given before, pure love of God. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with this prayer, and he continued with his instructions to Rupa Goswami and Anupama. And he described one interesting thing he described in addition to all the other ontological positions or ontological descriptions of Krishna, the soul, material world, the Lord's energies, the spiritual world. He described the process of devotional service. And Lord Chaitanya gave a very interesting analogy about the process of devotional service. In other words, how we experience becoming more and more Krishna conscious. He said it gave the example of sugar. And he actually started with the sugar, the seed of the sugar cane. Which is interesting. Normally, you don't hear the example like this. Normally, you just hear, like, sugar cane, then you press it into the juice, then you boil it, it becomes molasses, you boil it some more, it becomes crystallized, you boil it some more, it becomes rock candy. That's how we usually hear the example. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started this particular analogy, saying that first there's a seed. And of course, that's equivalent to what we call the bhakti lata bija, the seed or the devotion. Bija means seed. It doesn't literally mean creeper, it means seed. The seed which later grows into the creeper of devotion. So Lord Chaitanya said first there's the sugar cane seed. You plant the seed, and then, of course, the cane grows from there. And then after the cane grows and it's mature, then you put it through these presses. I'm sure you, some of you who visited India have seen the sugar cane presses. They're like two big metal wheels that keep revolving. Some of them are operated by a long crank handle, and others are operated by a motor. And so they put it through, and then you can drink the sugar cane juice. You'll see this everywhere in Vrindavan, at least. And then you take the sugar cane juice and you put it in a big vat. I remember I was at one temple, it was called New Naimisharanya, where they would do that. You remember that? They would put the sugar cane juice in a big vat and boil it. And you can get this gur after some time. First you get this molasses. Well, actually what happens is skim off the sugar as it crystallizes, and the molasses is the water left over from it. And the third skimming, you get blackstrap molasses, which has very little sugar. So, anyway, little technological information for you. So you boil this, and then first you get this agur, and if you keep boiling it more, then you can get, you know, the crystallized sugar. And of course, what they do nowadays to make the crystallized sugar white, there's two processes. One is actually they had some charred cow bones, they pass it over. But the general process now is not like that. The general process is they put it in a centrifuge and they separate, because I've been to the sugar cane factories, they actually separate the brown substance from the crystals, and then it becomes whiter and whiter and whiter. They mix some water with it to do that, and they centrifuge it. And of course, the brown crystals have all the nutrition in them. That's why in India, the gur is actually much more nutritious than the white sugar. Okay. And nowadays, of course, what they do, if you buy brown sugar, it's not actually the natural sugar that you're buying, but it's the white crystal sugar, then they add a little molasses to flavor it and to color it. So, anyway, so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this example. So when it comes to the stage of being a crystal, like crystallized sugar, then that's considered Krishna Prema. Mm. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, then beyond that you have the different rasas. Mm. There's the Shanta Ras, in which one appreciates the Lord, then the Dasha Ras, and then Asakya Ras, Vatsalya Ras, and finally Madhurya Ras, the conjugal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this Rasa theory that was given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was later systematized by Rupa Goswami in his book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we know is the Nectar of Devotion. So perhaps the most important book that Rupa Goswami wrote was the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Srila Prabhupada said is the law book for the Krishna consciousness movement. In other words, the law book for one's development of Krishna consciousness, not necessarily the law book for the management of the Krishna consciousness movement, but for one's internal life. One can understand the different stages of devotional service, offenses to be avoided, what you get from different stages, how to get rid of the anarthas, the symptoms of advancement in devotional service, the symptoms of an advanced devotee, the indirect rasas, the direct rasas, the mixture of the rasas, the improper mixture of the rasas, the proper mixture of the rasas. So many things are there in Nectar of Devotion. Perhaps our most important guidebook. The most important book would be the Srimad Bhagavatam, but the most important guidebook would be Nectar of Devotion. And so then later after the Nectar of Devotion, there's a further delineation about rasa theory, not just theory, of course, rasa theory and practice, and that's called the Ujjala Nilamani. So the Ujjala Deyavani is the postgraduate study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Of course, the Ujjala Nilamani is basically too advanced at this point for most of the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. So Prabhupada did present that to us. But the rasa theory is further developed in the Ujjala Nilamani. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also discussed the topmost planet, Goloka Vrindavan. And then after these 10 days with Lord Chaitanya, that would have been ecstatic to spend 10 days with Lord Chaitanya, hearing about the truths of devotional service. Rupa and Anupama went to Benares with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they wanted to go to Jagannath Puri, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, you should go to Vrindavan at this time. So he sent them to Vrindavan. They were feeling great separation. And on the way to Vrindavan, Anupama left this world. Anupama, some little information about him, was specifically focused on the pastimes of Sita, Ram, Lakshman, and Hanuman. So he was a Ram Bhakta. And Sanatan and Rupa Goswami tried to convince him to change his consciousness, but they were unable to do that because he was so devoted. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard about this, he said, this is actually a great quality when one is completely devoted to the master. Glorious is the master who doesn't reject the servant, and glorious is the servant who remains faithful and loyal to the master. So, Anupama passed away, and while traveling to Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami was thinking that dramatic playwriting would be a very nice way to elaborate on the rasa theology. Not on the basic aspects, the sambandha aspects of Krishna consciousness, or even abhideya, not on the practices, let's say, of sadhana bhakti or anything like that, but to elaborate on prayojana. That was how he used... he thought, you know, this is how, instead of writing something just very theoretically, let's have a drama to show people, or so the people can hear, to understand the internal workings of Radha and Krishna's loving exchanges, and also the loving exchanges in Dwarka. So while he was thinking like that, he prepared an outline that's a rough draft for a drama about Krishna's activities as a king in Dwarka and also as a coward boy. So as we know, those two things don't mix very well, as a king and as a coward boy. So as he was going to Vrindavan, he passed through a village named Satchabhamapura. And in that, Satchabhama, of course, is the wife of Krishna in Dwarka, who is expansion of Srimati Radharani. So that evening he had a dream, and Satchabhama appeared to him, and Satchabhama said, you should write a separate play. Don't combine these two aspects of Krishna's pastimes in one play. There should be two plays. And when Rupa Goswami met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later on in Puri, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirmed this. He said, there's a different mood of worship in Vrindavan and in Dwarka. But you have to show also how they're connected, and that's what these two plays do. So the, of course, those two plays are the Vidagdha Madhava and the Lalita Madhava. The Vidagdha Madhava deals with Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and the Lalita Madhava deals with Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. And of course, they're very much connected, because in the Lalita Madhava, you actually hear about the Rajabhasis appearing in Dwarka. You hear about Radharani appearing as Satchabhama, and he uses a very dramatic type of mechanism to show that Radharani, in the Lalita Madhava, he talks about how Radharani entered into the Jamuna. She was taken up into the sun, later became adopted by the sun god. The sun god gave her to Satrajit, and that's why she was called Satchabhama. And Satrajit later gave her to Krishna. So you actually hear all these dramatic mechanisms that Rupa Goswami utilizes in order to show the mood of the different resonance of Dwarka and Vrindavan and connect those two moods. So it's really interesting. Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava. So Vidagdha Madhava specifically deals with Vrindavan pastimes. And so if anyone's interested in hearing these two works, they're available on my, I think, well, the Lalita Madhava at least is available on my website. I've completed the Vidagdha Madhava, and that's being worked on right now. You know, people are adding sound effects to it and everything. Okay. So the books were finished. The Vidagdha Madhava was finished in 1532. Lalita Madhava was finished in 1546. And these two books are considered the most important dramatic literatures in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took care of Rupa Goswami for 10 months in Jagannath Puri and gave him further instructions. Although Srila Rupa Goswami never went into the temple in Jagannath Puri. And never went into the temple because it was considered that he had lost his caste by working for the Muslim government. So then Rupa Goswami went back to Vrindavan to fulfill Lord Chaitanya's order. And on the way, he went through Bengal, but he spent 12 months in Bengal just taking care of his family members, making sure they would be all right. He was very responsible. It's not that he just, like, left everything, but he gave them money, whatever they needed. Then when he entered into Vrindavan, one of the first things he did is he established a deity of Vrindadevi in Vrindavan. Vrindadevi, of course, is the presiding deity of Vrindavan, and she arranges for all the interesting exchanges, at least the scenery. The scenery, the animals, and the other things that form the background of Radha and Krishna's conjugal loving affairs. She arranges for the animals to talk sometimes, for the animals to do different things, like Kakati, Radharani's monkey, the old monkey, to do different interesting things, which we don't have time to talk about right now. So this deity, Vrindadevi, could be found in the Madan Mohan temple in, not in Vrindavan, but in Kamyavan. I don't know if anyone here has been to Kamyavan. No, I've been to Kamyavan. It's not where Vrindakund is. Vrindakund is a different place. That's near Nandagram. But this is in Kamyavan, which is all the way in western Braj. And the interesting story is the reason that deity is there now, because it was originally established at the Govindaji temple in the Vrindavan area, was that they were moving this deity out of Vrindavan so the deity wouldn't be destroyed by the Muslims. And when they got to the western edge of Braj, the deity wouldn't move anymore. You know, she's not a big deity, but she just wouldn't move anymore because Brinda wouldn't move out of Vrindavan. So that's why she's in Kamyavan right now. Kamya means the desires that someone has, van full of desires, that all your desires are fulfilled by going to Kamyavan. Very beautiful place. I have pictures of Kamyavan. I visited there when we did our Brajmando Parikrama. So, don't have much time. So, Rupa Goswami was lamenting at one time that he didn't have a facility to carry out fully Lord Chaitanya's mission because he wanted to construct a temple there. And just as he was lamenting, a young boy approached him and he told the boy of his mission to revive Vrindavan, and the boy told him, he said, inside this hill, there's a deity. There's a deity of Govindaji, who was established 5,000 years earlier by Brajanaba, who was Krishna's great-grandson. You know, there's Krishna, Prajuna, Aniruddha, and it's Aniruddha's son. And I've told this story before about Brajanaba when I'm talking about Govardhan. So the villagers buried the deity. And the boy described that every day a large cow comes and milk comes out of her and showers the place where this deity is. So Rupa Goswami heard the story, went to that spot the next morning, looked at the hill, and he saw her. Lo and behold, there was a cow and the milk was pouring out of her. And so, the villagers were called, and Rupa Goswami excavated this deity and installed Govindaji. Of course, nowadays, Govindaji deity is in Jaipur because the deity was moved out of Vrindavan when the Muslims attacked. And this deity is in the center of Jaipur. If anyone's been in Jaipur, you know that... where is... Oh, there she is. You know that most of the real prominent members of society go to see the deity. It's in part of the king's palace. So they go to see the deity. I've been to Jaipur several times. It's really amazing. Everybody, when they open the curtains in the morning, I mean, basically most of the prominent members of the city are there, and they're all going, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. And they're circumambulating, and then they go to work in the morning. They're intelligent, because actually if someone's going to work, they should get the blessings of Krishna before they work. I mean, sometimes I wonder why, you know, people living near the temple don't go to see the deity, at least get the blessings before they go to work in the morning. But there's culture. There's a different type of culture. So under the patronage of the Emperor Akbar, who was a Mughal, but very much interested in combining all the different religions, to have peace between all the religions, he was able to construct the Radha Govinda temple, and also the Jaipur Man Singh, a great personality in Jaipur, gave all the red sandstone for the temple. So later on, that temple was partially destroyed by Aurangzeb. Aurangzeb would see the light of the temple from Agra. You know, he would actually see the top or the ghee lamp burning on the top, and he got so angry he sent his soldiers to destroy the temple. But they were only able to destroy the top three or four stories, because when they started to go down, there was a tremendous earthquake, and the ground was shaking and, you know, rumbling, and they ran away in fear. So that's why you see like three or four stories of the temple there today. Let's see. We talked about the Vidagdha Madhava and the Ujjalini Lamani already. Just want to read one quote from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says, Srila Rupa Goswami compiled two important dramas named Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava, from which one can understand all the mellows derived from the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So they're very important literatures. And Srila Prabhupada, that's Srila Prabhupada's word. So we should hear these two dramas. And as I said, I've done a reading of both of the dramas that you're welcome to listen to. So one day, another nice story, Rupa Goswami was performing bhajan in Tero Kadamba. Anyone here been to Tero Kadamba? I have. It's a very beautiful place, very isolated place. They have deities of Radha and Krishna, little deities they put outside, and it's like in a forest area. It's one of the nicest areas in Western Braj. And he had an intense desire to do something for his brother, prepare some sweet rice for his brother. And as he was thinking like that, a young girl came and brought him the ingredients, and young, beautiful girl, and he gave the remnants to Sanatana Goswami after he offered it, and Sanatana Goswami said, where did you get this? And he described the young, beautiful girl, and it turned out the young, beautiful girl was Radharani. And so Sanatana Goswami, who is the elder of the two brothers, in one sense, Rupa Goswami considered him like his guru, the same stature of guru. Sanatana Goswami chastised Rupa Goswami, and he said, we are not supposed to take service from Krishna, we are supposed to serve Krishna. So this is a very wonderful story. Srila Prabhupada also tells this story. So today, we have about 1 minute left, today we are remembering Srila Rupa Goswami, and we should study his nectar devotion. I've given some courses on the nectar devotion. You're welcome to listen to these courses. You're welcome to read or make an outline in the Nectar Devotion. It's extremely important book, this Nectar Devotion. It's composed of four different directions and waves in each direction. It's like the ocean. You have like the eastern direction. It goes clockwise. Eastern direction, southern direction, western direction, and northern direction. First direction, it deals with just the general outline of devotional service like that. And then after that, you get into the sadhana. Sadhana bhakti, basically vaidhi sadhana bhakti, and then you go to the next direction, and you get into the raganuga sadhana, and then the next direction is the bhavas, and then finally there's prema. Okay? And then different, anyway, different explanations of different bhavas or explanations of different mixtures of rasas in the Nectar of Devotion. Very important book. So any questions or comments? We have about a half a minute left. Yeah. Go under sounds, then you go into some musical albums, and then miscellaneous albums. It's under there. Miscellaneous. It's under miscellaneous albums. I mean, I haven't really classified it properly, but it's... Oh, glorious Shri Prabhupada, Shri Prabhupada Jai, Shri Rupa Goswami.